ITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here are your hosts, Katie Comley and Jeff Sargent.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, there's been yet another shakeup in the BC Liberal caucus.
Canadian politicians calculate the fallout from the recent assassination of Pakistani opposition leader Benazir Bhutto.
And coming up at 5:30 tonight, we'll bring you a special documentary courtesy of Free Speech Radio News on the plight of Lebanon's domestic workers.
We'll have all this plus arts and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
But first, the controversial BC Liberal backbencher, best known for a private member's bill known as the Safe Streets Act, says he won't run in the next provincial election. This morning, Vancouver Burrard MLA Lorne Mayencourt announced he's considering a run for Vancouver City Council or a seat with the federal Conservatives. The federal seat for the downtown riding of Vancouver Centre has been held by Liberal Heidi Fry since she defeated Prime Minister Kim Campbell in 1993. Mayencourt says he might seek a seat on Vancouver City Council if current BC Finance Minister Carol Taylor decides to run for mayor. Taylor, who is also a current BC Liberal MLA, has also declared she won't seek re-election. Mayencourt was re-elected to the legislature in 2005 after defeating NDP challenger Tim Stevenson by just 11 votes. Mayencourt also made headlines after he was involved in a physical confrontation with a downtown panhandler and for spending 5 days living in the downtown east side to draw attention to the plight of the city's homeless. Now, with a look at other local and provincial news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Carrie Baptist and Marie Bedard.
Vancouver police have recovered what may be the last of four bottles of perchloric acid that were stolen from a downtown mineral analysis company. The missing bottle was discovered by a hazmat team called to the 300 block of Powell Street in the downtown east side. Police have been looking for the missing bottles of the highly volatile substance since early October, when one of four containers turned up near a downtown east side building. VPD spokesman Howard Chow says the stolen chemical was stored in 3-liter jugs.
The Greater Vancouver Zoo is facing controversy over a baby giraffe that's struggling to stay alive. 18-year-old Ilea gave birth to her baby on December 20th. Since then, the baby has been failing to feed from its mother. Now she's being taken care of by a veterinarian and zoo staff. Vancouver Humane Society Executive Director Deborah Probert says the only reason she can think of for breeding baby animals in captivity is to make money. ZooCheck Canada adds that there's no release program in place, so zoos cannot justify the breeding, this breeding, as conservation. Ilea's previous calf died of pneumonia after 8 days. Zoo representative Jody Henderson says the calf was not intentionally bred, and Ilea is displaying more interest in her new baby than she did last year.
The price of key ingredients for beer are soaring, and that means local breweries will have to pass the cost on to consumers. Jerry Heiter, with the Craft Brewers Association of BC, says poor growing seasons, combined with subsidies for farmers in Europe to produce canola instead of barley for biofuels, have driven the prices for some barley and hops up by more than a third in recent years. Heiter expects computers will see prices rise in February or March. Barry Benson of R&B Brewing in Vancouver agrees that paying more for key ingredients will cut his profits by about 10%. Benson says the smaller brewers will have a tough time shouldering the increase.
Police in northern BC are concerned about a rise in vehicle accidents on northern highways and have claimed the lives of 64 people in recent months. Yesterday, a rash of road accidents near Prince George left 3 people dead and many others were hospitalized, including 11 in a passenger van that rolled over. Sergeant Gord Fluelling of the RCMP's North District Traffic Service says record snowfalls are making roadways more treacherous. Fluelling says most accidents are preventable if people allow more time for their trip and take it easy when out on the highway. Police are asking travelers to drive according to road conditions and to ensure vehicles are equipped with proper winter tires.
Grade school students will be healthier, but parents may still have something to complain about in the new year. When classes resume next month, a junk food ban will take effect in BC's elementary schools. This will make school eating healthier, but it will also mean school fundraisers can't sell junk food like hot dogs or chocolates. Parents will have to find new ways of fundraising which meet the province's new health guidelines. Some school officials are already admitting it may be harder to make a profit with healthier foods. All right, it's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:07. A former Canadian diplomat says the instability gripping Pakistan following the assassination of opposition leader Benazir Bhutto could spill over to neighboring Afghanistan, where Canadian soldiers are based. Bhutto, the former Pakistani prime minister, was killed yesterday in a suicide attack at a campaign rally in the northern city of Rawalpindi, about 18 kilometers south of the capital, Islamabad. At least 20 other people also died in the attack, which Pakistan's interior minister has blamed on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Louis Delvoye, a former Canadian High Commissioner to Pakistan, says the violent attack will surely make the job of NATO soldiers on the ground in Afghanistan much harder. Western nations, including Canada, have called on Pakistan to take a more active role in preventing Taliban fighters from entering Afghanistan from its territory. But Delvoye says Pakistan's president, Pervez Musharraf, will now be focused on retaining power and internal stability instead of helping stop the flow of money and arms across the border. Now with other national news, once again, here are Carrie Baptist and Marie Bedard.
Ottawa has updated its travel advisory to Pakistan in light of Bhutto's assassination, telling people to avoid all non-essential trips to the country. While Foreign Affairs and International Trade Canada have long advised against traveling to Pakistan, it is now emphasizing warnings to Canadians who feel they absolutely need to be there. Department officials say anyone going to the country should ensure all travel documents are up to date and register and keep in contact with the High Commission of Canada in Islamabad. Canadian officials also continue to advise against all travel to areas reporting military or militant activity and all border areas except official border crossing points.
Businesses and government offices in St. John's had their doors shut today, and many flights have been delayed or canceled as part of Newfoundland and Labrador dig out from more than 20 centimeters of snow. Environment Canada says 15 to 20 centimeters of snow fell on the Avalon Peninsula, the Bonavista Peninsula, Clarenville, and Terra Nova. The Witless Bay Highway connecting the Trans-Canada Highway with a string of communities along the Avalon closed early this morning as driving conditions deteriorated as the storm pushed into the island from the south. Meanwhile, residents of many areas of Atlantic Canada are also digging out after the storm moved through overnight but failed to deliver the snowfall initially predicted. The storm delivered snow, ice pellets, and freezing rain to New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Nova Scotia. Various parts of the province got a mixed bag of precipitation, including 5 to 10 centimeters of snow.
Governor General Michel Jean has announced 61 new appointments to the Order of Canada, including Phoenix Suns star Steve Nash and Walter Gretzky. Rideau Hall says Gretzky has been named to the Order for his contributions to minor hockey in Canada and for his dedication to helping a myriad of local, provincial, and national charities. Wayne Gretzky was appointed to the Order back in 1984. Nash was voted the NBA's Most Valuable Player in 2005 and 2006 to become the first Canadian to win the honor and only the ninth player in history to win in back-to-back seasons. First handed out in 1967, the Order of Canada launched the creation of the country's own system of honors.
A Halifax bar where 38 people were arrested in a brawl now has its license back after promising to beef up security and raise drink prices. The Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board has reinstated the Dome's license effective today, one day after the province's Alcohol and Gaming Division endorsed the bar's new security plan. Grafton Connor Group, the owner of the Dome, has agreed to end the sale of $1 drinks, add more video cameras, and impose a lifetime ban on so-called troublemakers. The Dome's license was suspended Christmas Eve, hours after a large brawl that started inside the sprawling complex spilled out into the street. By the time extra police arrived, a series of fights were underway, and cops later arrested 38 people.
All right, time for another break here, but when we come back, we'll have the oddity of the week and update you on what's happening in the local arts scene. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Holy smokes! I can't believe I'm part of the coolest club in the world!
Bub?
Yeah?
So, what club is that?
CITR. As a club member, I get ginormous discounts on the Friends of CITR card, which in itself, Timmy, I must say, is pretty amazing. I get dirt cheap prices at stores and shots I'm at all the time anyway. To be honest, it feels like being in a club within a club.
Wow. Hey, I want a Friends of CITR card.
You don't even have to be a member to get one, although clearly you'd be that much cooler if you were a member. Go purchase your Friends of CITR card down at CITR, or at special events they sponsor, such as concerts, membership drives, and shindig.
I got it. It feels like having special powers. I go into stores and bam! Discounts.
Tis what I said.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th, from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building, right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Welcome back to News 101. Well, it's that time again for the oddity of the week. And, well, our producer today, Tyler Noble, is now back from a two-month-long sabbatical over in Toronto. So, first of all, I just wanted to welcome you back.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back, indeed.
Yeah, it's a little warmer out here.
That is true. Six and a half weeks in Toronto doing an internship related to my broadcast training. You and I, of course, are doing that together at BCIT, and also spent some time up in Terrace, as I do every year in December, to visit my family at this time of year. So a good dose of snow. Great to be back here in the Lower Mainland, where the weather is warmer and the snow doesn't stick around for very long. So
yes. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you back finally. And
thanks again. Yeah. I've been chomping at the bit to get back on the saddle and get on the air here.
It's been a while since you've been in the
studio. I haven't done much
here.
With News 101 either, but I've been called in here by Katie Comley and the other powers that be to help make the show happen during the holiday
season. You've been summoned.
Summoned, as you might say. Yeah.
Right. You've got a good one for us this week, Tyler. Some thieves who managed to get their hands on some extra holiday cheer, you might
say.
Yeah,
that's right, Jeff. In southern Georgia, thieves have managed to get away with over 2,000 cases of beer in a very peculiar heist. In the city of Albany, Daughtry County authorities are in the midst of investigating reports of a missing 16-meter-long tractor trailer loaded with some very precious cargo, that being more than 2,300 cases of beer. Now, the trailer went missing sometime in the past 7 days. This, however, is not the first beer heist to occur in the county recently. On December 21st, yet another tractor trailer carrying 300 cases of beer went missing. Although the trailer was equipped with a tracking device, the so-called brew heisters ditched the trailer and emptied it of the beer after driving only 5 kilometers. Katie and Jeff, your thoughts?
Whew, that is precious cargo. Now, two trailers?
You can hear the calls out there right now. No!
Yeah.
That is a disaster. I mean, I've heard about tractor trailers and 18-wheelers being stolen before,
but that really takes some doing,
first of all. And then that much beer in there, that's unbelievable. First of all, what would you do with that much beer?
I mean, awesome party. That's what you would do.
Yeah. Oh, I know, but that's 2,300 cases?
A really big, awesome party?
Maybe everybody in Albany will be invited.
Pretty much.
I would think so. That's just incredible. Now, 300 cases of beer went missing earlier.
Followed by another 2,300 cases of beer. So yeah. Maybe...
You got to think they're linked, first of all. But,
well, maybe they, you know, decided to have a party, and then word got out, and they realized that 300 cases wasn't going to be enough, so they had to hijack yet another trailer. Maybe that's the hypothesis.
This is why you're the voice of reason.
Maybe. I don't...
I'm just getting all excited. In fact, I didn't see this on
your ideas
until it was read just now, until Tyler read, and I was getting all excited about this. This is just incredible.
Well, the second question I'm going to tack on to Jeff's question is, I wonder what kind of beer it was. Because we have to remind ourselves, this is in Georgia, so
yeah,
it's probably American beer. So how good is this beer, actually?
It's probably a Bud Light. So really, you do the conversions, it's probably more like... 1,800 cases, not 2,300. Maybe less. Actually, I'd say less. Maybe like 900.
Depends where we are, right? The dollar for on par or not.
Yeah. I still think that's enough to get kind of smashed.
It would do me in. That's
yeah.
Well, very clever, these thieves. I don't know. However they came up with this plan, cunning enough. I don't know how they transported 2,300 cases of beer from a tractor trailer. Like, where would you... Because they ditched the trailer, so where did they take the beer? How did they get the beer from the trailer?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't take out that much beer in a matter of minutes. Like,
it's not like you're robbing a liquor store here.
No.
Yeah.
First of all, you'd probably need like a forklift or some device. I don't know how they were packaged in there. But
it's one of those questions, like how UBC engineers are able to hang cars off bridges all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We may never know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
anyways, that's the final oddity of 07 for you there.
We'll go out with a bang.
Quite fitting. Thanks, Tyler. And thanks for that. It's now 5:17 and time for this week's arts listings. Our arts director, Katie Fitzpatrick, is away again this week, so Jeff and I will try our best to fill in for you.
Well, we'll start out with theater today, and This Wonderful Life. Dan Amos brings more than 24 characters to life in a one-man version of the seasonal classic It's a Wonderful Life, but a man who despairs of his lot in life until an angel-in-waiting shows him what might have been had he never lived at all. You can go to pacifictheater.org for more information, and that runs until tomorrow. Tomorrow is the last show. It's at the Pacific Theater, 1440 West 12th.
Disney's Beauty and the Beast. It's the Arts Club Theatre Company presenting the stage version of the Oscar-winning animated musical, with music by Alan Menken, lyrics by Howard Ashman and Tim Rice, and the book by Linda Wolverton. Bill Miller directs Steve Maddock as the Beast and Amy Wallace as Belle. For more information, you can go to www.artsclub.com. That runs until January 6th, and tickets are $42 to $67 at the Stanley Industrial Alliance stage.
My Fair Lady is featured in Richmond, Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe's musical based on George Bernard Shaw's play Pygmalion, about a snobbish linguistics professor who makes a bet with his friend that he can transform a Cockney flower girl into a genteel lady in just 6 months. You can go to gatewaytheater.com for more information, and that runs until New Year's Eve, and that is at the Gateway Theater, 6500 Gilbert Road in Richmond.
Gary Plotter and the Pantomimer's Stone is a family musical comedy combining traditional pantomime with a parody of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter books. For more information, you can go to phtheater.org. That runs to December 30th. It runs at 2 and 7 p.m. at the Presentation House Theater on 333 Chesterfield Avenue in North Van.
Moving to music now, and our first feature is Marc Danjou, organist from the Quebec City Cathedral Basilica, performs works on Christmas themes by Decaen, Gigou, and Bédard, as well as works by Viren, Frank, and Mulet. That runs until December 30th, that is on December 30th, 7:15 p.m. Admission is free, and that is at the Holy Rosary Cathedral. That's at Richards and Dunsmuir.
Kyra Folkfarber, a Canadian soprano, sings music by Debussy, Zemlinsky, Brahms, and Bellini, with accompaniment by pianist Kinza Terrell. That's on January 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $20 or $15, and that runs at the Norman Rothstein Theatre on 950 West 41st.
Baroque by request. Alain Trudel leads the CBC Radio Orchestra with soloists Roger Cole on the oboe and Mayumi Seeler on the violin in a concert of audience favorites. That is on January 6th at 3 p.m. at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts right here at UBC.
In literary events, it's New Year's Eve with the Vancouver Poetry Slam. Performances by C.R. Avery and the Boom Chasers, plus an open cash slam with $150 in prizes. That's December 31st at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10 advance, $15 at the door, at Café du Soleil at 2096 Commercial.
A cash slam.
A cash slam, Jeff.
That sounds good. I might check that out. All right, moving on to art galleries now. Afua Granger, paintings exploring skin, transience, and beauty. That runs until January 30th of next year. That's at Aurum Argentum, 1351 Railspur Alley. That's on Granville Island.
Spirit of the Season features works by Carol Arnston, Joan Baron, and Sharon Norman. That runs till January 1st, 2008 at the Van Dopp Gallery at 421 Richmond Street.
Arnold Shives is Linnicut prints by this BC artist. That runs until January 20th at the Bob Pretty Library, 6100 Willingdon Avenue in Burnaby.
Henrik Hackeson is a solo exhibition. He's presenting a solo exhibition. He's a Swedish artist focusing on the orca as a means for formal research. That runs till January 13th at the Contemporary Art Gallery at 555 Nelson.
Remakes, variations from 1741 to 2049. New works by artist Tim Lee. That runs until January 30th at the Presentation House Gallery as well, 333 Chesterfield Avenue in North Vancouver.
Another thing you're going to want to keep your eyes on for is the annual Performing Arts Festival called PUSH, which is coming to Vancouver from January 16th to February 3rd. You can find more information about that at pushfestival.ca. And keep tuned to Arts Express every Tuesday at 2, along with News 101 for all the events coming up in that festival, as well as possible interviews with artists from the festival.
There's another upcoming interview on Arts Express. Will be coming from the storytelling festival called Story Feast 2008. That will be occurring from February 1st to the 3rd. You can find more info about that at vancouverstorytelling.org.
And finally, we have an announcement about a very exciting production coming to the Vancouver East Cultural Center. It's called Hecuba, and it's an ancient Greek play written by Euripides. It's actually one of Euripides' other works called The Bacchae in a literature... And the arts director, read this in a literature class here at UBC, and she says that it was full of fascinating questions as well as drama and a dark, powerful presence, perhaps qualities that will also carry over to this new production.
And that was your arts report for this Friday, December 28th. We'll have more next week, and Katie Fitzpatrick will be back for the next edition of News 101. All right, well, it's now time to take a quick break. When we are back, we'll check in with meteorologist Selena Ferris for a look at your weekend weather. Stay tuned. You're listening to News 101 on 101.9 FM CITR.
BCSportsBeat.ca is your source on the internet dedicated to providing you with information on professional and amateur sports in your province. You'll find game scores, team updates, and the perspective of the athletes through in-depth interviews all at BCSportsBeat.ca. BCSportsBeat.ca, your source for BC sports.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
CITR podcast update number 5.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. As it comes more and more into our personal lives, how are we going to cope with the techno peasants? I mean, this world, which was a fantasy for me 10 years ago, every 6 months becomes more a part of my own real life. You know, in the place where I do most of my writing, I now am just hooked into the world electronically, would be if I could figure out how to make the bleep bleep modem work. But I'm technologically over my head already. The limit on me is not what you can do, it's what I can do.
I'm not sure you want to use your bleep bleep modem, or any modem for that matter, with receiving podcasts. But, just check out our website and I'm sure you'll figure it out.
For more information, visit citr.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101. The current time is 5:26. This is Jeff Sargent alongside Katie Comley coming to you live from the Student Union building at UBC. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope everyone's enjoying a very happy holiday season.
And I express the same sentiments as Jeff. And before we go tonight, we're going to check in with our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, for a look at your weekend weather. Selena.
Well, we will be getting a break from the stormy weather over the next few days. Conditions will be clearing overnight, leaving us with a mix of sun and cloud for Saturday and Sunday, a high of 5 degrees on Saturday and 6 degrees on Sunday. This mild weather will only last until Monday, though, so expect another storm to roll in early Tuesday. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Oh, Selena, you got my hopes up when you said the temperature was going up in the weekend. I thought spring was here already, but I guess I can't be too eager.
Not quite.
Oh, so the storm that's coming up, is there going to be snow mixed in with that?
It might. We'll have to wait and see another couple days.
Okay.
So far, it's looking like it, but it could go either way.
So for all of us New Year's revelers, it could be a very interesting evening.
Yeah.
So I guess
get a little wet and snowy.
So plan your way to get home ahead, right?
And wear some good traction boots, especially if you're going out drinking.
Yeah.
Maybe the very stylish rain boots that I pulled out last year at News 101
yes!
with the polka dots might be appropriate. Yeah.
I'm very disappointed to not see them right now, actually. But
I've switched it up. Mm, I'm sorry,
that's
Jeff.
Too bad.
But thanks very much, Selena, and enjoy the rest of the break.
All right, you too.
All right, that's our program for today, Friday, December 28th. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, and if you'd like to share your comments, give a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334. You can always email news at citr.ca.
Tyler Noble produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Katie Comley.
And I'm Jeff Sargent. Thanks for listening. Coming up next is a special free speech radio news documentary. And coming up at 6 o'clock, CITR Sports Friday has a very special edition for you. Coming your way will be our blooper show for 2007.
disco dancer.
Yo, yo, listen up. Are you a musician or a budding disco superstar at any level?
List yourself in, like, the musician directory on livemusicvancouver.com, and you can find gigs that are, like, totally cool people to jam with.
We've got some groovy listings sorted by instrument and playing level, so you can find just the cool cat you're looking for. Could be a teacher, someone to jam with, or a serious musical project.
Profiles linked to past and present show listings, and band rosters, too, so you can even check them out beforehand.
Choose from over 1,000 local musicians or list your own cool profile online easily and for free at livemusicvancouver.com.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Millions of migrant workers worldwide live and work in conditions of enslavement. Currently, there are over 200 million migrant workers worldwide, and roughly half of them are women. Unemployment and household poverty, which have significantly affected developing countries, pressured these women to find jobs abroad. Join us today as FSRN's Simba Russo brings us The New Slavery, The Plight of Lebanon's Domestic Workers. I'm Ara Bogado. Stay tuned for a story that puts a human face on one country's almost invisible workers. Domestic workers, the majority of whom are women, constitute a large portion of today's migrant worker population. Nearly 19% of Lebanon's total population is domestic workers. These workers, who send remittances home, provide significant sources of national income to many labor-exporting countries in Africa, South, and Southeast Asia. Although domestic workers contribute billions of dollars in cash and services, policymakers, both at home and in Lebanon, continue to disregard their contributions and take advantage of their vulnerability. As Simba Russo finds, many women travel to Lebanon only to find themselves hungry, abused, raped, and subjected to conditions akin to slavery.
Domestic workers are not under the category of workers, so they are not covered under labor law. So they are considered servants.
She left me under the house every night. She left the door, and after and every day she is watching me what I am doing. She don't want to give freedom to me.
So the problem is that we have these agencies who take money, and this money creates these problems.
She's leaving behind parents or husband or kids, or she's leaving her life, the culture, and she's going somewhere totally unknown.
Western Asia is both a source and destination for many non-Arab, Afro-Asian migrant workers. Most workers come to Lebanon to take advantage of higher salaries relative to their home countries. Domestic work is the single most important category of employment among women migrants to Gulf states, Bahrain, and Lebanon. Mainly from Ethiopia, Sri Lanka, and the Philippines, they provide the bulk of household and cleaning services in Lebanon. These days, Arab women rarely do such work in Lebanon, viewing it as degrading or unacceptable, leaving it instead to domestic maids who take on poor working and living conditions and low wages. The first group of non-Arab Afro-Asian migrant workers to come to Lebanon were the Filipinos in 1973. Their numbers increased around 1980. A majority were females hired as domestic workers. Between 1975 and 1990, Sri Lankan laborers began arriving in Lebanon. They were brought in by Lebanese recruiting agencies. By the early 1990s, the agencies began also bringing mostly female domestic workers from Ethiopia. Female migrants are duly vulnerable because of their gender and migration status. Numerous cases of human rights abuses by Lebanese employers have surfaced, allegations of physical abuse and forced labor being among the most frequent complaints.
When I started work with this family, I was sexually abused all the time by the father of my employer.
16-year-old Elisa is from Ethiopia. Her mother died last year, and 8 months ago she came to Lebanon to work and send money home to her family. Awakened daily at 5:30 a.m., she is subjected to 18 hours of backbreaking labor without time off. For $100 per month, Elisa was required to maintain 5 houses a day, cooking, cleaning, and childcare.
The kids would beat me every day, and I would try to explain to Madame, but she wouldn't do anything.
There are over 20,000 Ethiopian domestic workers in Lebanon. Ethiopia has yet to establish an embassy in Lebanon due to political relations between the two countries, which leaves an understaffed consulate with the overwhelming task of protecting the interests of Ethiopian migrants. Sitting in the Caritas Migrant Center, Elisa expresses fears of taking on a new employer. She says she must stay in Lebanon to work so that she can continue to support her family.
Maybe I will have the same problems with my new employer, but because I have problems to take care of in Ethiopia, I will have to take a chance.
In most Arab states, labor laws generally do not cover migrant workers because they are considered servants, not employees.
There is the labor law who exclude on the Article 6, the house workers.
Roland Tauk is a migration lawyer. For over 15 years, he has represented domestic workers in Lebanon. He says that Lebanese laws are outdated. Because domestic workers are confined to the home, it makes it difficult to present issues of abuse and non-payment to the courts.
To change the law. So to have a special law for domestic worker, migrants or Lebanese or other nationalities, to change the law.
Elisa is one of thousands of domestic workers in the Arab world who face abuse at the hands of employers, human rights groups say. The plight of domestic workers in Lebanon rose to the spotlight during the summer of 2006, when Israel launched a 34-day military offensive on Lebanon. Many domestic workers were reportedly denied the right to return home, while others were left stranded either by their employers or their government.
All those who wish to leave should be able to do so safely.
Jean-Philippe Chauzy is the head of media for the International Organization for Migration. During the summer of 2006, the International Organization for Migration spearheaded the coordination for the evacuation of migrant workers in Lebanon. He says that this population of Lebanon's society should not be underestimated.
Yet Lebanon is a country of immigration that draws a lot of immigrants from the developing world.
Israel's military offensive last year presented domestic workers a good pretext to leave their employers. as well as helping to kill an industry that certain human rights advocates say was rife with problems.
I'm here in Shamaun. Yeah. And what time do we buy vegetables? Yeah, it's Tuesday.
Sister Amelia, a Jesuit nun and nurse who has been in Lebanon for 19 years, says domestic workers have long been considered second-class citizens in Lebanon.
This time, the situation is very, very ripe for them to run away. Since the very start, there have been horrible stories, and it never stops. Up to this time, it gets more horrible, gets more unbelievable.
Domestic workers in Lebanon work as many as 108 hours per week. They're fortunate if they get 2 days off per month.
I am free now. Every time my madam call, no day off. Within 2 years, no day off.
Bernadette Salvador, a 28-year-old domestic worker from a province in the southern Philippines, said that leaving Lebanon was an answer to her prayers.
I am run away with my madam. She left me on the house. Every night she locked the door, and every day she is watching me what I am doing. She don't want to give freedom to me.
Currently, there are over 500 domestic workers in prison, and many have reported ill treatment while in custody. Runaways, when they are found, are in prison and then deported. Without her passport, the worker cannot travel home. Again, Roland Tauk.
There are so many reasons. Maybe they break the law, the penal code, the criminal law in Lebanon. And they are like Lebanese in such case. But most of them, they are in other jail, in the retention center, because they break only the law of papers. They don't have papers. It means permit work and residence card to stay legally in Lebanon. Because the law is very clear. Every foreigner should be regulated and has papers to stay in Lebanon. As tourist, as worker, as a student, etc.
Shozi says that for these women who evacuated last summer and who run away is a difficult decision because they are sending about 60% of the money they earn back home to their family. For women who return home almost empty-handed, directly impacts their family's source of funding.
All these women, migrants who are here in Lebanon, are here for one purpose. They have got employment. They're earning money. They're earning between $150 to $250 a month if they're employed in a family, working as a house person. And they're sending about 60% of that money back home to the family who have stayed behind. So what you've got to bear in mind is that the decision to leave Lebanon is not always an easy one, because once these women have left Lebanon, they will return back home almost empty-handed. And the source of funding, the money that they've been sending back months after months to the family, this source of funding is going to stop. So the impact of the crisis goes beyond, if you want, the immediate needs of those migrant workers. You've got to also bear in mind the impact of this evacuation on the well-being, financial well-being of extended families in the countries of origin, whether in Bangladesh, Vietnam, Sri Lanka, the Philippines, Ethiopia, or elsewhere. So there's a much broader impact to this crisis, which for the moment hasn't been really considered.
Earlier this month, Human Rights Watch released Exported and Exposed. The 131-page report criticizes several Gulf states, Lebanon, and Sri Lanka for failing to protect Sri Lankan migrant women workers.
So the problem is that we have these agencies who take money, and this money creates these problems.
Human rights observers have reported on the growing use of agencies bringing in migrant workers. In many cases, these employment agencies are illegal and operate as black market businesses.
We are the originals here in Lebanon. Before we when we arrive here, they give us a rest day so we can enjoy our hardship in our working days.
Alfred Alvia is a top chef who has been in Lebanon for 20 years.
Now, the newly arrival, Filipino, they will be sacked by the agencies that you have not able to have your day off like this. So they are not happy on it.
One of the main causes of abuse is that migrant workers in Lebanon are covered under the kafala or sponsorship system, which states that migrant workers must attain a legal sponsor by a Lebanese employer or kafil for the duration of their contracts. The employer confiscates the worker's passport and other identity papers, which are returned when the employee is released. Lebanese employers spend up to $3,000 to a recruitment agency for a domestic worker. Again, Roland Tauk.
That's why they confiscate passport, to protect the money, to protect the money. Because if to confiscate passport, to lock the door, and that did not allow to a lady to go outside alone or to have a day off per week or to communicate with outside. It means from balcony to balcony or through the phone or by letter or any other kind of communication. Because he doesn't want to open an opportunity in front of the employee to leave his house, it means he loses the money. So the problem is that we have these agencies who take money, and this money who create these problems.
Sri Lankan recruitment agencies prepare the women for travel abroad. In Made in Lebanon, a documentary film by Carol Mansour, 16-year-old Sureka is getting ready to leave Sri Lanka for Lebanon. Her village has no electricity.
In 12 days, they have to learn the language, the electricity, the Hoover. You should see their faces when they were looking at this machine, you know, going vroom, vroom, and they were looking at it, and oh my God, you know, those women are, you know, the first time they're leaving.
While making her film, Carol discovered several cases of maltreatment.
Other cases where they beat them, and they think it's normal. Oh, come on, I just, you know, send her to the agent. He would, you know, just you know, and then she would come back and she would know how to behave.
In Lebanon, a new agency replaces the contract signed in the worker's home country, which is in Arabic, and the workers are unaware of the rights they are relinquishing. Again, Roland Tauk.
Now we're working in a unified contract. It means a contract, very clear, has all the details clear for both parties and signed by both parties in two languages.
Jordan has recently amended a law concerning registration of recruitment agencies. The new law allows the Ministry of Labor to monitor these agencies and to take serious actions if they violate the regulations protecting migrant workers. In 2003, Bahrain announced a national plan to assist abused foreign workers that includes temporary shelters and a help hotline. New migrant workers in Bahrain will also have access to a guide to rights and duties, which will be available in embassies, recruitment offices, and points of entry. The government is also looking at ways to organize work permit procedures for migrant workers. You're listening to an FSRN exclusive documentary, The New Slavery, The Plight of Lebanon's Domestic Workers, produced by Simba Russo. So far, we've heard how domestic workers are abused and excluded from protection under Lebanon's labor laws. When we return, we'll hear about sending money home and a new agreement to assure rights for migrant workers. I'm Aura Abogado. Stay with us. Most migrant workers come to Lebanon to take advantage of higher salaries. While policymakers, both at home and in Lebanon, continue to disregard their rights. The Philippine Overseas Employment Administration estimates there are over 30,000 Filipino workers in Lebanon. Last year, the POEA reported a deployment of over 8,000 new hires.
But 450 times 2 is equivalent to $1,000 2 months' salary. It's going the agency. Their own money, because they in the we, you are flying to go abroad. The agency paid all things like medical, like the medical is X-ray included. X-ray had all of your things need in physical check. They pay it. and they pay your work visa in the Philippines. They pay it, and what you need in paperwork, they pay. Then they cut it when you go. They put the flyers, fly now, pay later.
4 months ago, Eric and his wife Karen left the Philippines to provide a better life for their family. While driving buses in the Philippines, Eric became certified as an electrician to enhance his chances of finding employment abroad.
We sacrificed our sons, left in the Philippines because of poverty. My income salary is cannot afford for buy excess things like this. It's only afford to buy a food, a meal for a whole day, to rent house. Sometimes 1 month salary, your income, cannot afford to pay the rent of the house. That's too much poverty.
According to a recent United Nations study titled Sending Money Home, Asia receives almost $114 billion in remittances annually. The study also found that last year, overseas Filipino workers sent home $14.6 billion. OFWs worldwide represent nearly 23% of the country's labor force. Foreign remittances currently account for about 13% of the Philippines' total gross domestic product, according to the POEA.
We are the giving money to our government.
Sri Lanka extends fewer protections to its migrant workers than other labor-sending Asian countries, such as the Philippines. The Sri Lankan Bureau of Foreign Employment estimates there are nearly 86,000 Sri Lankan women employed as domestic workers in Lebanon. Rose, a 32-year-old single mother from Sri Lanka, needed a means to provide for her daughter. The option of working overseas sounded very promising.
Madam, not buy here.
Not buy here.
Vegetable? Me buy.
How worker are?
No, madam, bring rice, bring
madam, Patina,
chicken.
Work.
No good.
For almost 3 years, Rose has been working in Lebanon as a domestic worker. Daily, she wakes at 6 a.m. to endure 18 hours of grueling labor.
I want money, good money.
Why?
I'm told, madam, I want to $400, madam. Madam told AMC. Not told AOK, AMC told. It's okay, $300 is okay. We come back.
Sri Lanka received $3.4 billion in remittances last year from migrant workers abroad. The Central Bank of Sri Lanka reported a 7.4% growth in the economy in 2006, largely driven by money from overseas that went into technology-related services, construction of properties, and the garment industry. On Sunday, the Department of Labor and Employment announced the processing of Filipino migrant workers would resume to Lebanon, lifting restrictions on a ban imposed last year due to tensions in the country. Under the new rules, migrant Filipino workers will only be sent to Lebanon if paid a minimum of $400 per month. The number of migrant workers is likely to remain high due to labor market demands. However, it is not certain if Sri Lankan workers like Rose will see improvements in their working condition or protection of their rights. Reporting from Beirut, Lebanon, this is Simba Rousseau with the assistance of Jackson Allers for Free Speech Radio News.
You've been listening to an FSRN exclusive documentary, The New Slavery, The Plight of Lebanon's Domestic Workers, produced by Simba Rousseau. Special thanks to producer Tina Gisi and Antonio Ortiz and Philip Wang for technical production. You can get a copy of this or any other FSRN documentary by visiting our website at www.fsrn.org. I'm Ara Bogado. Thanks for listening. And make sure to join us tomorrow when we hear about inflation and social unrest in the West African nation of Senegal.